Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sahni, and with me is a man who is legitimately one of the top 10 to 15 men that I know. It is, of course, Mr. Steve Lillis. How are you?
Hey, 10 to 15. As long as I'm not 15, I'll take 14th in your rankings, yeah. But yeah, no, I'm not gonna going to take 15th.
How are you doing, Steve? Good?
I'm good, Dev. Good being here with you again to do the second week of this podcast that's never been done before.
Never, ever. Do you have an advent calendar out of interest? It's just something I've been... wondering.
Yeah, I have actually. And
how many have you got?
I've just got the one, and it's an American jelly bean one. And I've only eaten about two of them. My youngest daughter, I'll give it to her every day. The night before, she takes the next morning. So I've hardly had a taste of my jelly bellies, whatever they're called.
Because I had a right treat this morning because I've got four, and I'd forgotten about them. So I just smashed through up till day 12 across all four of the advent calendars.
So you've had 48 chocolates, that means, this morning.
Around that, yeah. There's a couple of windows here and there which probably haven't been opened, but I'm on a bit of a sugar high, which can only mean we're going to have a good show. So before we get going, though, Steve, I need to ask you, what did you think of Lomachenko last weekend? Because you were on the in the Box Nation studio, weren't you?
I thought that was probably the worst I'd ever seen him, but he was still an 8.5 out of 10. The 11th round was fantastic. That's how good he is. When he's at his worst, he's still dismantling people. And you know what? I thought Jose Pedraza was really good in the fight. Really, really good. But what in that 11th round, he was something else, wasn't he?
It was an avalanche.
Lomachenko. I've seen him perform better. He got a bit marked up, but he was still very, very good at his worst. And I do fear for, looking at his size and looking what Pedraza's size was, and Pedraza's someone who's only just gone up a weight, I do fear that he can't go any further in weight than what he is now.
Well, this has always been the thing. There's always been the thought that it's going to be size that beats him eventually. This was his second fight at lightweight, two world title fights, is that right?
That's right. And size is the thing that's going to beat him. Size if he goes through the weights, that will beat him. And when I did the Box Nation special with him, he knew that himself, and he emphasised that talk of him eventually going to welterweight was crazy. I think he'll only go up to junior welterweight if it's the right opponent.
And does it? One thing that's been going around, because obviously Pedraza at 130 pounds, he lost to Javonta Davis, and Javonta Davis' step-up fight, and Javonta Davis, after a few rounds, really just kind of switched it up and went through him. So suddenly, for a lot of people, the fight between Lomachenko and Javonta Davis is a bit closer than what it was maybe before the Pedraza fight with Lomachenko. What do you think of that?
Yeah, fair point. There's people making a case for Javonta Davis. But I will say, I think Pedraza, looking at the size of him the other night, I think we've got to take into account how weight-drained he might have been against Javonta Davis. But I'm not one of these that go, he did him in seven rounds and went through him like a knife through butter. He beat him. I'm not a believer in it. It's like saying, Tottenham drew 1-1 with Barcelona, so Barcelona shouldn't win the Champions League in May. It is a bit like that. But I'd still back Lomachenko to beat Davis.
Absolutely. Well, this week's show, I had to get that in. We had to have a bit of Lomachenko on the show. But this week's show is super stacked. Steve Lillis has been putting in the hours. We've got Tyson Fury's trainer Ben Davison on the line. IBF World Featherweight Champion Josh Warrington's on the show. And a fired up super flyweight Sonny Edwards talks to Steve Lillis. And Steve Lillis has got one hell of a rant. Give us your next hour or so and we are going to box your ears off. Now, imagine being a young boxing trainer. You're learning your trade, you're around great fighters. Your biggest night in the sport up until this point has been when you took charge of Billy Joe Saunders' corner. And actually, it wasn't that great a fight, wasn't that great a performance, and you became target for a lot of criticism as maybe a bit of a scapegoat. Now imagine the lineal heavyweight world champion who's seemingly fallen out of love with the sport, is ballooned to 28 stone. He suddenly asks you to become his trainer and trust you as the driver on his ride back to the top of the sport. Well, this is what happened to Ben Davison. What a story and what an interview this is between Steve Lillis and the young trainer of Tyson Fury.
Ben Davison, thanks for joining us on the Boxing Podcast. And before we ask you about Tyson, let's speak about yourself and shall we say, the last 13 or 14 months since a 6'9" gypsy from Manchester came into your life? What's it been like?
Yeah, look, you know what? It's very hard to explain this rollercoaster journey that we've been on over that period. But it's been emotional, physical, it's been hard, draining, but it's also been enjoyable. And, you know, I think that the fight sort of shows a bit of everything. The fight was sort of like a short version of what the whole period has been like. And, you know, it definitely created a spectacle in the end, that's for sure.
I mean, when he first asked you to train him, when he had his issues and he was, you know, 28, 29 stone, in your heart of hearts, in that very moment, did you think he could do it and lose the weight and get back to the top of the heavyweight division?
I genuinely didn't know at that time. And we'd only done a couple of sessions. I knew from the first session that we'd done at the time, I actually went over there for a training camp for Billy Joe Saunders. And At the first session, I knew that the love for the sport was there because, you know, we couldn't wait to get going. And, you know, even at that point, I was having to hold it back. I was having to say, okay, instead of run today, do this instead or do that instead or adapt this session a little bit like that. You know, because of his physical condition at the time. And I think he liked that. And then he started to mention to me about taking the job on. And I've just said to him, you know, don't rush into any decisions. Let's just carry on training and work together and see how it goes. And no, I didn't know what to expect at that point. And then along the way of this journey, there's been some pivotal points that sort of just stood out for me to say, okay, this man is ready, or where he showed me that listen, he's a different level to everybody else.
What were those pivotal points where, you know, when in your mind, wow, this, you know, this guy could get back to where he was?
There was definitely a few. But one that really stands out to me was when Tyson was on a ketogenic diet at first, once he came over to Spain. And we'd done, two weeks of training and over in Spain at this point. And I said to him, okay, just for a change up, I said, look, we're going to go over to the Istan Mountain, which is a mountain run that the boxers do over there.
Yeah, I know it, yeah.
I said, we're going to go over there. I said, we're just going to have a walk. We just walk up it. He said, okay. Anyway, we got our coffee on the way to the mountain, to the bottom of the mountain. We headed over there. Anyway, when we got out, he started loosening himself up and everyone was sort of looking like, whatever's he doing? So like, we're going for a walk and he took off. And he started running up. Everyone was like, what's going on? What's going on? I said, listen, he'll be all right. I said, he'll stop in a minute. A minute went by. I said, he'll stop in a couple of minutes. A couple of minutes went by. I said, he'll stop in 5 minutes. 5 minutes went by. And he just kept going and going and going. And we got to the top, to the point where the boxes run up to 12 kilometers. And I said, okay, we've got there now. Everybody's on to the top. He said to me, that's where everybody else stops. Not where I stopped, and he carried on going right to the top of the mountain. And I thought, there and there, this man is different from everybody else. No other heavyweight. One other heavyweight is the only person who has ever got up that mountain.
What about yourself, Ben? What sort of personal satisfaction did you get from the performance in Los Angeles, given that there was plenty of people questioning you, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, and I think you'll always get that. I just think that's how the public can be a bit fickle sometimes, you know. If there was a bad performance, it very quickly changed. My goal as a trainer is to get the best out of the fighter that I'm working with, and that's all I focus on. The rest of it can come and go. You know, and I think that the condition showed that we got Tyson into, especially in that 12th round, you know, to get knocked down heavily, get back up and still have your legs underneath you. That was, I was proud of that. Please.
And what was it like having, you know, if you needed to turn to him in the corner at all, having Ricky and Freddie Roach there, if you needed to ask a question or, you know, or ask them if they agreed with you on something?
Yeah, fantastic. What better setting could you get than Ricky and Freddie Roach?
And also, we have another second in the corner called Asgard
Tyson. Yeah, I know him. He's the king of the pads, isn't he? He's great on the pads.
Yeah, he's great on the pads. And
Asgi actually, he had the underlay changed on the ring just a few hours before kickoff because they tried to, whether they'd done it on purpose or not, I don't know, and I'm not making many claims, but the underlay was very thick, and Asgi was there, he waited there all morning, stayed there until it got changed and made sure it got changed. And he's very professional at what he does, Asgi, and he's a fantastic asset as well. And Ricky actually made a good comment when Isaac was fighting. He pulled a little pointer out that played a big part in Isaac's win as well, which was fantastic and great to have. And obviously Freddie, Freddie's a fantastic asset, legendary. You know, what better thing could you get than that?
What's the difference between you now as a trainer than the first night I saw you when you was in the corner with Billy Joe Saunders for the Arta Akhovov fight?
Not a lot, really, I don't think. As a trainer, I've always had my fundamentals and my philosophy that I like to work to. And that night in Scotland there, obviously, I look at boxing a different way to the average person, you know. And okay. I knew, obviously, I've worked with Billy Joe for a long time, and I knew the situation Billy Joe was in there. And I knew what Billy Joe had in the tank, and we had to be very, very, very economical. So I understood that. While at home, the public might have thought, why is he telling him to keep as he is when the fight's very, very tight? But I know that Billy Joe had to manage himself. I knew where the fuel tank was. I knew that he couldn't push too far because he would have emptied the tank. And, that was a job well done, just getting Billy Joe through that fight with the win and a successful defence, because he too had a hell of a lot of weight to lose leading into that fight. He had a lot of problems outside of the ring, a lot of problems in his training camp. And we managed to come out of a defence, I consider that was a successful outing, because we come out with a win when Billy Joe is lucky to make it to the ring.
And just going back to Tyson, he said, the last 13 months you've been in the gym non-stop, both of you. You're in Orlando speaking to us, you need a rest, Tyson needs a rest. How long would you like him out of serious training now before he kicks on again, big style?
Well, we'll have a chat when we get back. We'll have to have a look. We'll definitely get things going very quickly in the new year. But he's in the gym now, I knew he wouldn't be able to last a week out of the gym. It's vitally important. And, this is a big thing that people have been talking about, the transformation, etc. Okay, the performance was fantastic. That's brilliant. But all that means nothing if the man is not in a healthy place mentally.
Right, yeah.
And in a happy place. And that's something that we've worked on and spoke about and gone through many, many times, and he knows now what he needs in life, what he wants in life, and what will keep him happy and keep him on the straight and narrow. And he knows that a routine, structure, and being consistent with it is very important. So, it's important that now he doesn't have a fight and then want to completely rest and not do anything. He wants to go straight back to work, straight back to training, get a routine going again. And it's helping him stay mentally. I don't think you've ever seen Tyson in a better mental state than where he is now. And that's more important than anything else, because like I said, the rest of it can come and go. If a man's not happy and healthy, your health is your wealth, and everything else is pointless.
And with the regarding where he goes next, be it a Wilder rematch, I think I saw an interview with Frank Warren and he's not expecting too many developments this side of Christmas. What about yourself? Are you the same as Frank, expecting something maybe in the new, very early in the new year?
Yeah, we have to have a look at it, And we have to weigh the options up, because we have to look at the numbers that was there, and obviously there'll be a massive uplift on them because the rematch is in high demand. But at the same time, do we risk going back over there with the chance of that sort of judging again? And big risks mean big reward, and that'll have to be weighed up and measured. Or do we have it over here? If it's over here, it would have to be in the summer, because it would be a stadium fight, and we'd like to get Tyson out before the summer, of course. So there's a lot to think about. We're not in any rush, and there's wants and needs. Wilder's team need the fight because they're not looked at as the champion anymore, because the world knows that Tyson won that fight. Whereas we want the fight. It's not a need or a necessity for us, because the world knows that we won the fight, and Tyson is still the lineal heavyweight champion of the world. And, Tyson put himself back on top of the tree. And there's lots of options that we can go with. like I say, it's a need for them. So we're in a different situation. So we've lots to think about, and we'll weigh it all up for sure.
Even Joshua's mentioning his name quite a bit now as well. So, you know, he's in that situation. He's the man everybody wants all of a sudden.
Yeah, but, you know, same thing again. There's not been no contact from them. They've not tried to make the fight. You know, they were saying before the fight that, oh, we need to have something in place before that fight takes place. Well, they didn't get a deal done with Joshua. They still don't know where they're going. Whereas Eddie was saying, oh, we need to know where we're going before that fight. And, you know, they've not made any contact towards our team about a fight. So they talk about it, but actions speak louder than words, and there haven't been any action taken on that. So, but like I say, look, the ball's in our court, and we can play it how we want to play it.
Steve, I'm a Ben Davison fan. I mean, he speaks so well. He comes across as really headstrong, and it's like he's got an old head on young shoulders. What do you think?
Yeah, look, the thing with Ben, I'm not going to say, because, you know, he had a great night in the corner the couple of weeks ago, Ben, and he did fantastic. But, you know, Ben knows himself. I'm not going to start saying he's going to be the greatest trainer of all time, although he could prove in years to come to be a special trainer and one of the greats. We don't know. He's a very young man. But the first time I met Ben, the one thing that struck me about him is how intelligent he is as a person. Mm. He is bright as a button. And people who have got to know him in boxing have been full of praise of him, the way they've spoken, he speaks, and the way they've seen him operate. For example, the way he cuts the tape for the cuts, you know, for the man who does the bandages, stuff like that. Yeah. And he cuts them all an identical size. He's very meticulous in his work. And as I say, I'm a big fan of him, and I hope he does go on to become a great trainer. I can say nothing but good about Ben as a person. But he knew that if things had gone wrong against Deontay Wilder, he would have got it like he did when Billy Joe Saunders fought Artur Akhovov. But in the interview, he explained why Billy Joe boxed like he did, and it was about getting him through the fight with a win.
Yeah, no, and that was really interesting, actually, hearing him talk you through that Saunders-Akhovov fight. And do you know what? He come under a lot of stick, a lot of criticism after that, and maybe he's actually done quite well. Maybe it was actually very good what he did in the corner with him. That's what it's starting to sound like now when you hear about when he tells the story. It's very positive for Ben, and you see how Tyson's trusted him. Billy Joe Saunders can't speak highly enough of him. So but I understand also, Steve, you've got a bit of a rant. Your whole what you talking about, Lillis. We're going to bring that forward because I know you're fired up. I know you've got something on your mind. So, Steve, I've got to ask you, what you talking about, Lillis?
I'm raging. I'm absolutely, honestly, with Freddie Roach, because we did that interview the night before Roach made his outburst about Ben Davison, how Pisani was bad in the corner. He cried in the 12th round and that he, you know, he basically saying he was patronising. And he was so out of order. That was poor form. It was quite shocking. And to say he's just a 26-year-old boy was so patronising of Roach. Ben has got Tyson to the ring that night. And for Freddie, to me, is just angling for the job to make himself look good. It was a horrible what he said in that interview about Ben, and totally unfair and wrong. Now, I'm sorry to use another football analogy like I did a few moments ago about Lomachenko and Gervonta Davis. But
give it to me, Steve. Give it
in
to
football,
me.
If another manager said that about another manager, and, you know, I could do a better job, you'd be seen as hawking for his job. But, you know, because you're Freddie Roach and, you know, the Pacquiao fanboys love him, he gets away with saying this stuff. You know,
He hasn't, though, has he? He hasn't got away with it.
No, but he'll get away with it. No, he's not getting any trouble for it or anything like that. You know, he's had his rucks before with Robert Garcia. You know, Brandon Rios, I think he nearly come to blows with. He's criticised Khan before after he left him. You know, he's not shy, Freddie, in giving this stick out. And this isn't going to stop fighters going to him. Now, if I was at a young fighter and I was thinking of sending him to Freddie Roach, I'd think twice after this.
It felt like, and maybe I haven't followed the Freddie Roach story closely enough. For me, he's always been, the only time he's ever really, like, annoyed me, so to speak, was the whole Pacquiao shoulder thing after the Mayweather fight. Suddenly he had a shoulder injury for the whole fight. It wasn't that Mayweather outclassed him. But that aside, this whole thing kind of felt out of character, that out of nowhere he suddenly started, you know, having a go at Ben, and Ben was this young trainer. He was crying in the corner, and he could have knocked out Wilder if he'd have had better instructions.
It's this madness, because when has Tyson, even when his uncle Peter was training him, been a fighter who goes out and chins people? Because Freddie's an aggressive trainer. That's what he expects them all to do. It was just so wrong. And you know what? I'm not surprised at all. We have seen these little undercurrents with Freddie in the past.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens when the rematch does take place, when Tyson Fury's next fight. I'm sure everyone is working on it to make that happen. And yeah, let's keep an eye on that. On December 22nd at the Manchester Arena, Leeds hero Josh Warrington makes the first defence of his IBF World Featherweight title against two-weight world champion Carl Frampton. It's a tough first defence. It's a fight he didn't have to take. But sometimes, when you're on a roll, you've just got to keep on rolling. So Steve Lillis caught up with Josh Warrington earlier this week.
Yeah, camp's flying. Feeling fantastic. I could fight, you know, tomorrow if I need to, fit, always fit, you know. I went up another fork out a few weeks back in sparring and whatnot, and they were coming up to fights, and you know, I'm always on weight or thereabouts, strong, quick, you know, records have been broken again in camp, so I'm in a good place and I can't wait to fight. The last few weeks it's been busy outside of boxing. But the boxing's flying, it really is, and I can't wait. I can't wait to just get in there and start having the fight, you know what I mean? I do wish it were, like, sooner than the war, but some beer.
You beat Lee Selby, Ellen Rowe, 25,000 fans, some at the stage of forever. But beating Carl Frampton, it's legacy building, isn't it?
It is, and back to back. Who does that, you know? Who defends the title in first fight in a massive fight like this? Didn't have to do it. You know, I've got a fan base where I could have just come back to Leeds and boxed number 15 and been a voluntary. I had a nice, like, you know, December, like, rest over Christmas time and gone again next year. But no, we decided to go for the tough fight. You know, Carl's coming in like it's his last big opportunity, so he's going to absolutely give everything. It's a big pay-per-view show, so it takes a lot of promotion and selling. But I'm excited, and what a year for me, 2018, you know, there for my little girls, winning world title, creating history, fighting Ellen Road, beating Carl Frampton, you know, it's meant to be. I've said many a times, this is my year, and no one's going to stop that.
What do you say to Carl when he says it's about levels and he's been there?
How many levels is a man, you know what I mean? I thought once you get to world stage, then you're on that level. You know, I've beat everyone who's put in front of me. And I snatched the world title off of Lee Selby. I didn't just like get it gifted. I didn't just, you know, even though it was a split decision, everyone knows it won a split decision. I boxed him for 12 rounds and I felt like I had more in tank, more in armory. And then, you know, to talk about Carl's another level. I mean, there was a debate prior with, and it would kind of split it, who were better out of Lee and Carl. So to me, I think he's on the same level as what Lee is. You know, I think when you talk about the elite, Lomachenko's elite, you know, I don't think Carl is, the potential to be when he won the world title off Santa Cruz, but has he lived up to that? I don't know. He's been a few years since he lost that title, and you know, no fault of his own, there's been things going on outside of boxing, but you can't really say the wins he's had, you know, again, no fault of his own, with the opposition, make him an elite fighter. And I think I'll show that I've got more work it takes to beat him on the 22nd.
He acknowledges your strength, but when he's watched you, he thinks you're a bit careless with your head.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
Well, I am. I think it's old fashions. My old fella used to give me as a young lad, I can take a bit of a beating. So, listen, it's boxing. You don't go swimming without getting wet. You're bound to take a punch now and again. Going in with head, I don't know if it means like headbutting and all like that, because if that's the case, then, you know, no one ever done deliberately in the last fight. Every fighter has a weakness. And Carl's got his as well, so I'm looking to exploit them.
It's only your second fight this year, but how tough a year has it been for you mentally? The fact that just before the last fight, you had twins, you had 25,000 tickets to sell at Ellen Road, you had a tough fight against Selby when so many people wrote you off. then, you know, got to spend more time with your twins. Then this fight came up, and then you're moving house in the middle of it. You know, how do you cram it all in? Could that have an effect on you at all?
No, mate, I was European champion, and I was still working as a dental technician. You know, I was, whilst there were people throughout their career, I mean, I wouldn't. British, Commonwealth, English and European title while working a 9-to-5 job. Who does that? You know what I mean? And most people, when they get to title levels, they have sponsors coming out their backside, and that's what they used to just focus full on training. I've been able to deal with pressures of you know, selling tickets and having a lot going on outside boxing. Life goes on, you can't just wait around. And if anything, I felt like I recharged myself after Saudi fight. Yeah, it was a big build-up. It felt like a 5-month build-up, and then obviously babies as well. But I had enough time off to recharge myself mentally as well as physically. And I've been back in, learning, working, and it's the fight what excites me, what keeps me focused.
You'll always be one of the boys from Leeds. You know, you always make that clear that you haven't changed, you won't change, you've no intention of. But what does it do for your ego and building you up when you hear people like Santa Cruz and Oscar Valdez particularly saying he wants to fight you?
Yeah, it's good, but at the same time, I can't get like carried away with myself. Like, oh, they want to be sharing me. It's boxing, and I want to beat them. I want to prove that I'm not just a world champion for now, and I belong at that level. And like I said, earlier, it's about creating a legacy. You know, after that room with Selby, I was thinking to myself, who's next? Because I believe that I've got more to give. And, you know, beating Carl in the same year back to back, I do that, and then we're going next year and we're going to unify, and that's what we want to do. I've set my goal of going over to the States and unifying the division, and that's what we want to do when it starts with this fight.
Is Las Vegas ready for 10,000 Leeds United fans in the middle of summer?
I don't think I'll ever be ready. but, you know, it starts now so they can get prepared.
Do the boys keep asking if you're going to Las Vegas?
Yeah,
you?
Definitely. I mean, I think the one for a lot of the fans and the boys were Ellen Road. For a good, you know, four years, it was talked about, when's it going to be Ellen Road, when's it going to be Ellen Road? And there was always a little inkling of Vegas or New York or wherever, you know, somewhere in the States. When's away day? And since Ellen Road's been ticked, you know, this one's like, right, when we're off to Vegas, when we're going over there. So, you know, I've pictured it many a time. I went actually there a few years ago watching Carl when he lost his title to Santa Cruz in rematch. And I was watching his fans walking up and down the strip, and I thought, this could be me and my lot. You know, thousands of them making plenty of noise, and I want to make it happen.
Steve, he says this is his year. He became world champion. He did it at Elland Road. He had the birth of his twins. And then he could round the whole thing off with a huge signature win over Carl Frampton. It feels like the momentum's with him.
Oh, the momentum's with him massively after that Lee Selby win in front of 25,000 fans. And if he beats Carl Frampton next week, it won't just be his year. He'll most probably be fighter of the year. You know, an upset win over Lee Selby, who some people will say is the best featherweight in the world. And if he beat Frampton, a two-weight world champion, a boxing idol in Ireland, it would take it to another level, his success story this year. You know, not bad for a kid who, you know, had a tough upbringing in Leeds at all.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the things that he's been talking about, Steve, I've heard Josh say this, he feels like he's not getting the credit for the win over Lee Selby. Why is that? Is that the case? Do you give him credit, Steve Lillis?
Oh, I'll give him heaps of credit for beating Lee Selby. I'll be honest, I didn't think he was going to beat Lee Selby. There was two people from day one who told me he would beat Lee Selby. That's Frank Warren and John Rawling, the commentator. I didn't meet another person. You know, there was so many people afterwards telling me they knew he was going to win. Frank Warren and John were the only people who told me he would win. So all the credit he gets for that, the more, because it wasn't just a fight being the underdog. He was going around punting tickets to that fight till 2-3 days before, old school style. And he pulled it off with an absolutely stunning performance. He started really well. Selby got cut early. You just thought, this can't go on. And he just maintained that all the way through. And that, you know, I'm sure we'll preview the fight more in depth next week against Carl Frampton. But he's got to keep that momentum he had for those 36 minutes when he fights Carl next week. He deserves all the credit and more. And I think plenty of people are crediting him. I think maybe the Warrington camp's got a bit of a siege mentality, you know, which is good in some ways. Them against the world, you know, no one's given us the credit. And they're using that to get themselves ready for the fight against Carl.
Yeah, I think that could well be the case. And it's one of the things Carl Frampton has said in the build-up to this fight is that there are levels, and he is levels above Josh Warrington. You've got to think Carl Frampton has seen the highest highs so far. He's been the Ring Magazine Fighter of the Year. He unified the super bantamweight division, and then he moved up to featherweight to dethrone Leo Santa Cruz, and that was in the space of what, a few months? It's incredible the highs that he's had in his career.
Look, if you talk levels and look at their records, you know, you tick the Josh Warrington win against Lee Selby, and there's two or three, some other good wins on there, but there's nothing that stands out to the CV that Carl's got. You know, you go back, you know, when he first signed with Frank, you know, his second fight for Frank Warren, Nito Denaire. Okay, Denaire was a lot smaller, but a four-weight world champion. You know, he's dropped back down to a natural weight and won another world title, albeit lucky. The performance in Brooklyn against Leo Santa Cruz was another level. That was something, you know, that was beautiful to watch. Then he lost a close fight to Santa Cruz in the return in Las Vegas. You know, Scott Quigg, when he unified the title, he was the man away from home. And, you know, he was on Quigg from the off, and Quigg suffered a broken jaw. And people say Quigg started slow that night, but Frampton was right on him. There's other great wins. Alejandro Gonzalez on points, you know, where he got off the floor twice after a couple of rounds. You know, the two wins over Kiko Martinez, you know, I think the first one, when he stopped him in 9 rounds, was better than the world title performance against Martinez. You know, Steve Molitor had seen better days, you know, a former world champion, but he'd only lost a couple of times. But he's fought at a level higher than Josh, without saying. So when he talks levels, I can understand why.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But Warrington is what, he's 4 years younger now. He's coming into his prime. He's on the ascent, never been down as an amateur or a pro. You know, he's got a lot of momentum going into this fight, so it's going to be very interesting, and we will break it down in more detail next week. Steve, that's an absolute cracker on December 22nd at the Manchester Arena. We learned just earlier on this week that Billy Joe Saunders, the returning former WBO world middleweight champion, he's actually been added to that show as well. It'll be good to see him back out.
Yeah, he needs to get out, and fair play to Dominic Ingall and Billy for making sure they get an outing before the end of the year. It's just such a shame that it hasn't been his year this year. You know, he's had issues, you know, away from the ring, and he had to, well, he decided to relinquish his WBO title, and he needed to get back in the ring. And it's just a shame where you spoke momentum, that's with fighters like Josh Warrington. The momentum should have been with him this year. We should be talking to him, you know, now about possibly being the best middleweight in the world without a doubt. He's lost a year of his career, really, when he really should have, that initiative should have been with him. And I'm just glad he's back. I don't think it'll be anything too demanding next week. And people might say, oh, who's he fighting? He shouldn't be fighting this guy. He's been out of the ring for a year. There's been a lot going on. He needs this before he gets back on the halls next year, just to get back in the dressing room, what it's like having your hands wrapped in a room, in the dressing room, the ring walk, that sort of thing. And let's just hope that 2019 will be a busy year for him.
Well, a bit of a subplot to the Manchester show. Obviously, Billy Joe Saunders has been added. How about this one? Martin Murray, he's fighting Hassan and Dam on the show. It's a cracking fight. It's a 50-50. It's a crossroads. But Martin Murray and Billy Joe Saunders, they had fights scheduled. The fights didn't happen, and they've fell out, obviously, over social media. There was a lot of back and forth that went on between them. Be interesting to see what they're like around each other for the first time since those fights, you know, since those press conferences and everything that's happened, eh, Steve?
Well, they're going to be meeting at the press conference in the middle of next week. Their paths might cross at the workouts, and it'd be interesting to see what they say. Their fight now, if they did fight, is bigger than ever, and 2019, it could happen. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a good fight. Obviously, Murray's got to come through and Dan, but as a fan, I'm still interested in that, especially if Murray comes through and Dan and does a job on and Dan, because and Dan is a good, he's a damn good fighter.
He's a very good fighter. You know, he beat Murata in Japan, albeit controversially, and then obviously he lost the rematch. But the level he's been fighting at for a lot of years now. He's one of the great fringe contenders, isn't he? Even though, you know, who eventually did win a title, albeit briefly.
Well, we shall see, and it's one that we're really looking forward to on December 22nd. It's next Saturday. It's really coming up fast. Josh Warrington against Carl Frampton. What a stacked show. Nathan Gorman's on there as well. Mick Conlon's on there. Tommy Fury's making his debut. Imagine that. Tyson Fury's brother. He's like 19 years old. He doesn't look anything like Tyson Fury. He looks really muscular and really, I mean, I was about to say he looks really good looking, but I mean, that's it.
He's a bit better looking than Tyson. I don't mind saying it. They're always joking he should be on Love Island or a reality show, not a boxing ring. But it's great that he's on the bill. But you know, it's nepotism that's helped him get on this card, given that he didn't go and conquer the world as an amateur. But you know, the sort of pressure that goes on, you know, Tommy Fury. We want to see what the new Fury's like. It's quite incredible the pressure that's on these guys.
Well, we look forward to seeing how he gets on and how they all get on next Saturday night. On Saturday night at the Brentwood Centre, it's showtime. After a scintillating career-best win over Ryan Farag, 9-0 super flyweight Sonny Showtime Edwards is back. He takes on former Jamie Conlon opponent, tough Mexican Junior Granados. Now, Steve Lillis gave the outspoken Edwards a quick call.
You had a bit of a breakout fight last time out. Now it's Junior Granados. Another step up for you. You're proving yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm in this game to do, to be honest. And I've said from before my debut, I've said all the way through that I'm here to take proper fights. I don't get up or stimulated for, you know, sort of journeyman and easy rollovers. And I think finally I'm proving all the times I've been calling out for these sort of named fighters and good fighters, that it weren't just, you know, sort of trying to build a name for myself on the back of getting mentioned in the same sentence as them. Like, generally, I want to fight these fighters. And, I think after the Ryan Farag fight and the performance that I put in against, obviously, the toughest fight of my pro career, which was meant to be anyway. And because, it was very one-sided. I won every round on two scorecards. And then straight after that, now, like, my stops gone up like drastically. Like, even though I am very outspoken and like always have been, now people are actually sort of, their ears perked up and they thought, well, he can actually fight because he proved it. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, Junior Granados, though, he gave Jamie Conlon a torrid time. He's just knocked out an unbeaten fighter, Roque Mex, just a couple of weeks ago. You know, why is it going to be different when he fights you?
Because I think styles will always make fights. It's the biggest boxing cliche, but it's true nonetheless. With me, I'm coming at every angle. I control my distance very well, my timing. I'm good at reading fights. Like the Jamie Conlon fight, when Jamie was just sort of moving and hitting the jab, and like, no disrespect to Jamie, but he hasn't got the best like boxing ability. Like, he's a very tough man, but he's not the most slickest boxer in with the best like ring movement and generalship, etc. And at times when he was just standing there and trading, that's when Granados was getting his work off, because he's tough, do you know what I mean? And he liked hitting a steel target. When Jamie was boxing and moving like behind a jab, he was out boxing the kid. So yeah, with me, I think it's going to be a similar strategy, similar tactics to what I fought Farag with. And that sort of, especially early on, just control the distance, bag the early rounds. And as the danger starts going down with the opponent slowing down, that's when I'll start looking to, you know, to sort of piece my work together. Because at the end of the day, you don't have to take risks, you know what I mean? Or not more than you have to. And I feel this Granados is made for me stylistically. He plants his feet a lot. He comes in with his sort of like face first and just sort of tries winging in big shots. And I think I'm going to have him shadow boxing for most of the night, if I'm honest.
You know, this WBO title is moving you up in the world rankings. But the fight we all want to see, and I know he says he won't fight you, is Paddy Barnes. Why won't he fight you? Where will you fight him?
It's not for want of trying.
He doesn't like you, does he?
No, he doesn't like me. And I think it's wearing thin with a lot of people. Because at first, when I was calling him out, there was a lot of people like, oh, yeah, I'd like to see that fight. It'd be Paddy's biggest fight. But then a lot of people on his side going, oh, what does Sonny offer? Oh, Paddy Barnes would wipe him out, but I don't think you see that now. I think now after that performance with Farag and what I showed against, I can do against what I've always said is a better fighter than Barnes in a professional ring. I think Farag is more dangerous, and he's shown that in bigger fights over longer rounds. Paddy, I think, is way past it. I think he's a three-round fighter. In all of his fights, like when he boxed Silvio on a two, whatever his name is, he scraped through that, just won it. Do you know what I mean? And even then, a lot of people was a bit like, well, he was like quite lucky to get that. The fight that he gunned him with the good body shot, he looked a bit knackered, you know, just before that. Coming into the sixth round, he looked like a bit, like, quite fatigued. And then against Rosales, in the fourth round, he was absolutely goosed, you know what I mean? He was breathing heavy, and I just don't think he would ever have it in the long rounds to have any success about, like, against me. And he says that he doesn't like me, and I just think he had his rush chance at the world title about boxing no one, and it didn't work. He got put down very heavily, and that should slip him right back down to where he's at a point now where he has to prove himself in a professional ring. You can't keep fighting for world titles on what you've just done as an amateur when you've lost as a pro. And I think we're seeing sort of now where Paddy Barnes should be. Like, this great Paddy Barnes that says he's the biggest name in flyweight boxing and no one else will box on TV if it wasn't for him. Well, I box and headline Box Nation. 7 weeks later, I'll be boxing as, I think, the second main fight on BT Sport. And then my brother is boxing as main support on a box office show. Do you know what I mean? So Paddy Barnes is very deluded now. He's miles off. I've seen pictures and videos of him, three and a half weeks out of a fight. He looks fat and out of shape. Like, his heart's not in it. He's just trying to make a quick buck. And that's why he's begging, oh, no, I'm only fighting for world titles. I want the IBF. You haven't done nothing to warrant fighting for another world title. Go and fight someone. Go and actually get a win. I'm 22. Already, I'm about to go, hopefully, 10-0. And it'll be my third 10-round fight. Like, another... straight after Farag, that's two 10-rounders, two tough 10-rounders as well in the space of 7 weeks. I'm not ready for world titles yet, so I'm not pushing for them. I'm not mentioning world champions because I've still got a lot of learning to do. I'm building my way up there and I'm building my career. Like, wouldn't everyone rather see, and wouldn't it probably generate more money, yeah, seeing a big fight between me and Paddy Barnes than Paddy against just an unknown person or fighting for a world title? It just doesn't make sense to me. I can't wrap my head around it.
7 days after your title defence, there's a world title in Manchester again. Carl Frampton challenging IBF featherweight champion Josh Warrington. Who wins that one?
Josh Warrington, because Carl Frampton's mates with Paddy Barnes.
That answer will do for us.
Nah, do you know what? I'd like to see Josh do it. He's one of those ones as well. You can't really write off Josh. Like, look what he done with Selby when he was quite the underdog for me for Selby. And then he took him to pieces, really. Not in a disrespectful way, but he boxed fantastic. And I don't know how good Carl Frampton still is. I think the Carl Frampton of a few years ago probably would have beat Josh Warrington. You know, the sort of the quick Frampton. But I don't know if he's changed too much since then. He boxed on their heels. He's an aged fighter, do you know what I mean? And Luke Jackson was, even though he was an Olympian, he wasn't the most reputable opponent, even though he was a good fighter, do you know what I mean? I think it's another interesting one, to be honest. I'd probably edge towards Frampton, but not confidently at all.
Steve, Sonny Edwards said that the performance against Ryan Farag proved that he can fight, and now people are taking him seriously when he calls out people like Paddy Barnes. What do you reckon?
Hey, proved he could fight. I was there for Box Nation that night, and it was a brilliant performance for a fight that, okay, he was favourite, but it was the manner of which he did the job on Farag. Everything he said he was going to do to Ryan Farag, he did. And Farag's mixed in good company and beaten good fighters before. That was as flawless a performance as you'll ever see. Him and Farag sold that fight brilliantly. And he just lived up to everything he said he was going to do to Ryan Farag. And I'll be interested to see how Ryan bounces back, because that was the sort of performance that Naz used to do to people, and then they were never the same again.
Well, high praise. I'm a big fan. I think we might be seeing like a little super flyweight version of Billy Joe Saunders. Like some of the things he was doing against Farag, and he was showboating as well, and that adds to it, especially at those weights.
I think for, you know, when he gets really serious, I think he'll box at flyweight because he is small. I think he boxed at light fly as an amateur. And he's just the size of some of these super flies at the highest level. He's just taking the opportunities that are there. But I'll never forget when he had about four fights, I was speaking to Andy Ayling at Frank Warren's office about him. And he said, do you know something? I wish that every boxer had Sonny Edwards' attitude. He'll fight anybody. And he will. He's one of these fighters. What he says, he means, whether you agree with him or not. And he does a fantastic job of projecting himself. And BT Sport viewers on Saturday night and people at the Brentwood Arena are in for a very good fight against Junior Granados, who gave Jamie Conlon hell.
I'd imagine Conlon still thinks about him sometimes. Like it was one of those fights where it certainly, you know, puts miles on the clock. But he had to overcome hell in that fight to get the win, Conlon.
Yeah, and he did. I think it was the seventh or eighth round. If he'd been the away fighter, he might have got stopped. He gritted his teeth. He come back and got a decision after 10 rounds. And what I will say about Granados as well, he lost a split decision in June 2016. He then went away for 18 months where he didn't box. He come back last month into a 12-rounder straight away and stopped an unbeaten man with 7 seconds to go in that fight. Says a lot about him.
It sounds, Steve, like a potential banana skin. What a fight to take for Sonny.
He fights anybody. He will fight anybody. I mean, as I say, I'd like to see him get to flyweight to fight at the highest level, and I think he wants to too. He'd fight any of the super flyweight champions. Wouldn't be frightened at all. Fearless kid.
Well, good on him. And you say he'll fight anybody, but will anybody fight him? And that seems to be kind of becoming a bit of a theme of the interviews. Anytime I speak to him, any interview that I've seen him, he's always saying, I want Paddy Barnes. Then I'm watching interviews of Paddy Barnes, and he's saying, I'm not going to fight Sonny Edwards. He's got his reasons for that. It might not necessarily be a duck, but he says he doesn't need to fight him. So will it ever happen? What do you think?
It depends what MTK have got planned for Paddy Barnes. I think the fight has to happen. You know, look, it's hard for these flyweights and super flights to get their name into the mainstream. This is the sort of, I know you see every fighter turns professional and they might moan, oh, I want a rivalry. And this is the fight that will certainly make Sonny Edwards' name. I mean, Paddy had the great amateur career, but it's a sort of fight he needs as a professional. Because as a pro, he's best known, Paddy, for losing his WBC title challenge back in August. That's no slight on Paddy. He could bounce back and become a world champion. But to a lot of people, Barnes against Edwards has a bit of magic about it. And I'm sure BT would love that fight on their channel.
Yeah, and I'd certainly love to see it. Well, Sonny Edwards is back 9 o'clock Saturday night on BT Sport. Also on that show, you've got the return of Bradley Skeet, who we talked about last week. He's kind of resurgent in his last performance at the Brentwood Centre. I think they've got Ryan Garner on the bill as well, who's always worth a watch. He's 7-0. I know he's a real favourite of Frank Warren's. Frank has called him kind of like the next Naz, which is very, very high praise indeed. So you know Frank's high on you when you say things like that. So we're looking forward to that, 9 o'clock Saturday night on BT Sport 1. Well, this weekend sees the return of Canelo Alvarez. Fresh from his controversial win over Gennady Golovkin, he's stepping up to super middleweight to challenge none other than Britain's very own Rocky Fielding for the WBA World Super Middleweight title. Steve, this is a dream come true for Rocky, right?
It's a dream come true. Go to Madison Square Garden and fight the Mexican Idol, one of the biggest stars in world boxing. It's fairy tale stuff for Rocky from Stocky, as they call him, across in Liverpool. Look, the last thing Rocky must have thought whatever happened, but he'll be in Madison Square Garden fighting Canelo Alvarez, especially after he lost so quickly to Callum Smith. And he's just got to go out there and be fearless, because he might have size in his favour, but it's very, very hard to make a serious case for him against Canelo. The, you know, Golden Boy have brought him in for one reason, because they think he's made for Canelo to win another world title before he goes back and to consider further options.
Well, he was literally asking Canelo for a selfie last year, last year. So it's quite a story.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. And you know what? You've got to put a lot of people say, oh, what's he taking him on for? He hasn't got a chance. You'll really see me criticise a fighter when a chance like this comes up, as long as they're getting well paid for it. You go get it, Rocky. I just wish you all the best. He's a lovely kid as well, Rocky.
Well, he's a lovely, lovely bloke. Here's one for you, Steve. If he wins, will it be the greatest upset in the history of boxing?
You know what? It would be up there, won't it? It would. Okay, let's just go on. I mean, we think Buster Douglas, Tyson,
yeah,
the greatest. It would certainly be a bigger upset, in my opinion, than Lloyd Hannigan beating Donald Curry in Atlantic City back in the 80s. That's how monumental it is. It'd be the greatest upset a British fighter has ever been involved in. That's for sure. Even though he's the naturally bigger man.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, and also, talk about naturally bigger. I put it to you. I'm sure he's going to be taller than him. Obviously, he's a lot taller. We can see that. I put it to you that Canelo's going to weigh more than Rocky Fielding on the night. This guy cuts down from a ridiculous weight. He's huge. The thickness of Canelo. I just have a feeling he's actually going to be heavier than Rocky on the night. What do you think?
Yeah, well, he's weighed in at about 180 pounds before. Is it 182 for when he fought Liam Smith or something like that? Something ridiculous it was.
If that is ridiculous.
And, you know, you speak to people who have boxed him before, and they've always said the biggest thing that shocked them was actually how strong he is. I know Matthew Hatton fought him at a catchweight weight. I think it was about 150 pounds that fight was made at, and he missed weight Canelo. And Ryan Rhodes said the same thing. And, you know, to a man, everyone who's boxed him, British fighters have said about his strength.
Well, so something on that. So they're fighting for the WBA regular title. Does that take anything away from it from you? I know. Do you know what it feels like, Steve? It feels like that because if Canelo wins it, right? Say he beats Rocky Fielding and he becomes the champion, it almost kind of legitimizes the title.
Callum Smith is the champion of that division, WBA. What it doesn't do, it doesn't. If Rocky Fielding wins, it doesn't damage the shock. But the champion of that division is Callum Smith.
Yeah,
he's the super champion. He's the man who is the champion. I mean, these belts are just so confusing sometimes. So it certainly doesn't dilute the fight in any way for Rocky.
No.
But, you know, you although in history will tell you, and Canelo has won a world title at another weight if he wins on Saturday night, you've got to look a bit further. Was he really the world champion then?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. It feels like the fighter makes the belt in this one. So if it's like, say you're at cruiserweight, everyone knows Usyk's the cruiserweight champion, right? No one thinks of Shumanov as the champion. However, if Canelo picks up the WBA regular title at super middleweight, people will look at him as a legitimate world champion. I just see that happening. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, it does. It happens, especially given the name he is and the number of people they hope he'll bring to the app that the fight's being televised on. But, you know, if they started talking him as the legitimate WBA champion, wouldn't you be a bit miffed if you were Callum Smith?
You would be. You'd have to fight him for it. So, yeah, it would be very interesting.
The talk is that he's going to drop down to middleweight after this fight anyway, so.
Yeah, well, it would be interesting to see what goes on there. But really, I mean, good luck to Rocky Fielding. What an opportunity for him. He can go and do the biggest upset in the history of boxing. I really think it is. The other week, I thought if Jason Wellborn beats Jarrett Hurd, that'd be it. That's the biggest upset in like anything ever. But now we've got another opportunity here for Rocky Fielding to go and do it. And I hope he does. Come on, Rocky. Well, there is plenty of boxing on this weekend. Steve, you are the Box Nation man. Come on, tell me, what's going on? What you got going on this weekend on Box Nation?
On Friday night, come Saturday morning, Dev, we are stacked on the Channel of Champions. We're at York Hall Friday evening from 7 o'clock, and we've got 8, possibly 9 fights live, definitely 8. The two main fights, IBF European Welterweight title, Larry Akondayo defends against unbeaten Louis Green, which is, you know, Akondayo, he's only had 15 fights, but seems to have been around forever. But the main event is an IBF European Super Lightweight title fight over 10 rounds between the Irish Aussie, Dara Foley, and Akeem Ennis Brown. Now, Foley, we saw against the Welshman Chris Jenkins on Box Nation a couple months ago. And the fight ended in a no contest in round 2 because of a cut to Jenkins. I think it was his left eye. A lot of people are telling me that Ennis Brown is good enough to upset him. So that's one not to miss on Friday night. That's on air from 7 o'clock. And then after your call, Barry Jones and myself are dashing across the central line, you know, that red line on the tube map.
We're
getting out at Shepherd's Bush. We're running down Goldhawk Road and we're going to get to the Box Nation studio by about 2:30. And we're on air then for the WBO super middleweight title rematch between Gilberto Ramirez, who makes his fifth defence against Jesse Hart. They boxed last September 2017. It was one of the fights of the year. Yeah. Hart got off to a great start in round one, and we thought, wow, upset. Second round, he got dropped. Just about got through the round, was very nearly stopped. Lost his way for a couple rounds, and he came firing back and lost a narrow unanimous decision. Had he not been floored, who knows what would have happened in that fight. That is a fantastic rematch. And also on that bill is a super lightweight fight between Arnold Barboza, who's 19-0, highly ranked by the WBO. He fights a guy called Manuel Lopez, who hasn't done it as a pro, but was a fantastic amateur.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that's a busy fight. That's all on Friday.
All on Friday. And then we're having a Saturday night off this week.
Oh, well, you deserve it. You deserve it, Steve. But here's one for you. You talk about Ramirez there. So he's the WBO World Super Middleweight Champion. Now, Gennady Golovkin is, my understanding is, he's kind of talking to everyone. He's talking to all the promoters, all the broadcasters. He's trying to find a home, basically, since HBO is no more in the boxing world. So ESPN is a big US broadcaster. They're affiliated with Bob Arum and Top Rank. Ramirez is a Top Rank fighter. Ramirez has a belt at the weight above. Golovkin versus Ramirez next year in a stadium. How about it? Golovkin grabs another belt at the weight above. What do you think?
Hey, that's the fight. Look, Bob Arum has spoken to Golovkin and Golovkin's people, and I'm sure that's the fight he's offered him. But that's the sort of thing being dangled in front of Golovkin right at the moment, because, you know, we've no idea if the third fight against Canelo Alvarez is ever going to materialise. We haven't got a clue. But they're the sort of thing. If he went to the super middleweight division and said, I'm signing with you, Bob Arum, he'd deliver Ramirez in a heartbeat for him.
Well, Steve, another week, another great podcast, and we're going to be in Manchester next week, aren't we?
We are. You're on my manor, Dev, from early next week. You're on my manor, so I want you on your best behaviour. Because there's not a thing that happens in Manchester I don't know about.
Where are you taking me? Like, can we actually go somewhere? Like,
I don't know. Where, you know what? They'd have to open for us, Deb, because we don't drink at all. They'd have to open a bar that sells different brands of mineral water, wouldn't they, to keep us happy all Christmas week? Everyone wants to be out after the work's done at 10 o'clock at night. We'll be going for a glass of water somewhere, or, you know, and a coffee. And I'll go for a quick 6-mile run while you done with your 400 press-ups you do every day.
I'll have a little go. 400's a huge stretch and it would really kind of misrepresent what I'm capable of. But thank you anyway, Steve. So, yeah, I'm up for sort of a mineral water and a mince pie next week. Let's do that. And listeners, thank you for listening. And remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sarnie Dev, and also, let's not forget, it's BBC Sports Personality of the Year coming up, and you know who's got to win. You know who we all want to win. The boxing world collectively needs to vote for Tyson Fury after everything he's come back from, and you know he should have that WBC world title around his waist. Let's make sure he wins Sports Personality of the Year. Let's catch up next week. Have a good one.